We continue with the fourth episode of If I Had Been a Boy, I Would Have Been Shot by Yaroslava Skleničková, in which she tells the extraordinary story of her life following the destruction of her home village of Lidice at the height of the Nazi occupation in June 1942. David Vaughan gives us the story so far.
Because she is just over 16 and therefore considered an adult, Yasha has been sent, along with her older sister and her mother and all the other women of Lidice, to the Ravensbrück concentration camp north of Berlin. The women, 184 in total, are confined to one cramped barrack, working and sleeping in two shifts to save room. Yet the women try to maintain at least some of the dignity of their old lives in the village. In the camp, they discover that they are not to be joined by their children or their husbands. Veronica Hicks reads.
Arbeit macht frei, or work will set you free. After 14 days in quarantine, they began to allocate as work. Mila was placed in the Schneiderei, a workshop where military and prison clothing was sewn. I, with Mama and another 44 women from Lidice, were set to stitching fur linings for overcoats for Air Force members. In each shift, we had to stitch two sections. Various types of fur, which did not match at all, would be sewn together, such as rabbit with lambskin, or astrakhan, and other rare skins stolen from previous prisoners, mainly Jews, and also from confiscated fashion establishments, for instance from Paris. Sheepskin was hard to sew, while astrakhan and rabbit were too small. We worked only at night. The shift started at 6 in the evening and lasted 12 hours. As midnight approached, it was a hard job for me to keep awake, let alone to stitch the fixed norm. It was only thanks to the assistance of my mama and the other women from Lidice, who quietly recounted to me various stories from their lives, so that I did not fall asleep, and so that the overseer would not beat me, that I was able to keep on working. After such a night, we still had to stand from 6 in the morning for the roll call, which lasted over 2 hours. Because after the overall count followed the working call, part of which was inspection for the morning shift. Tired and with bare feet, we were even more chilled, so that the only way to get to sleep at all was to pour the morning portion of black, bitter, would-be coffee into the trough for washing and warm our feet a little in it. Sleep, if it came at all, for there was always something going on in the barrack, was interrupted by lunch. In the afternoon, we were again aroused for the evening overall and working roll call, before the departure for the night shift. In addition to the overseer, each working group had what was called a kolonka, a prisoner whose task was to see that everybody worked and to announce at the roll call the number of prisoners in the column, which had to agree with the records of the overseer. In our column was a German woman whom Mama told at the work call one day that I was not well. Looking at me, she believed it, and allowed me to return to the barrack. Around a fortnight later, Mama tried again, but the kolonka replied that she herself was not allowed to release anyone from work any more. When the guard comes, she will decide. It was not possible to back down, and so I stood next to the other two, who had also claimed to be ill. I do not know who was the first. The second one was a gypsy girl, and the third me. When the guard came, she beat the first two, and they had to go to work. When I saw that, I grew even more pale. The guard looked at my triangle, which bore the letter T, then at me and said, "How up? Pack off." Oh, how relieved I was. I dragged myself slowly back as long as I was in her view. Then I ran back to the block and looked forward to some extra sleep. I had already worked 12 weeks on the night shift. Lack of sleep and the cold had played its role, and I looked to everybody as if I had tuberculosis. When I visited the camp sick bay, where we were allowed to go only with a temperature of over 38.5 degrees centigrade, I was helped once more by Hanka Hoskova, who worked there as an assistant nurse when receiving new prisoners, and also as an interpreter, for she spoke German perfectly. She was shocked at my appearance, and when she learned that I was doing night shifts all the time, she pleaded with the camp doctor that I was not able to sleep during the day, and during work at night I fainted. The way I looked was so convincing that he did not doubt her words at all, and wrote out a card for me saying, "Nur Tagschicht," to work only on the day shift. In the end, at roll call, I was selected to join a column of 20 women to distribute the cauldrons of food from the kitchen to each barrack. In addition, each morning, to carry briquettes in wooden crates with handles to those barracks where work was going on. In charge of the column was a Polish woman, Mrs. Lusza, a teacher in civilian life. Otherwise, we were a mixture of many nationalities, about 4 Polish women, a German, a Ukrainian, I a Czech, and we also had a gypsy woman, who repaired and wove baskets for the kitchen. We, more or less permanent workers, numbered 20, but each day we were supplemented by others without a job from the work roll call. Mrs. Lusza's assistant, or proxy, was 23-year-old Janina. I made friends with her, and she then became my saviour for the whole time of my incarceration in the camp. In the Polish barrack with her were students from the Warsaw and Lublin transports, all young girls around 20, most of them condemned to death. Carried out on them were experimental operations on legs, on bones, and muscles. During such surgery, a piece of bone would be taken out of the leg and replaced with a foreign body. When a bone operation was performed, the leg would be put in plaster for some time, while during a muscle operation, sulfonamides were inserted and the wound was then sewn up. The surgeries were accompanied by high fevers. Prisoners with weak hearts soon died. For this reason, absolutely healthy girls were later selected. After muscular operations, the healed wound would fester after some time, and the foreign body would be expelled. I remember 23-year-old Jadwiga, whose whole calf festered and putrefied, and all that remained was the shin bone. More than 80 women were thus operated on and crippled. In camp, they were called little rabbits. I learned after the war that experiments on Polish women were being carried out after the death of Heydrich, so that a certain Berlin doctor could prove that had he been allowed to use sulfonamides in treating him, he would have saved his life. Frequently I would spend my free time on Sundays in their barrack, singing their songs, and because in the kitchen, where I spent most of my time, most of the people were Polish women, I soon picked up their language. Once, when Janina was unwell, the Polish women who worked in the kitchen of the SS brought an aluminium jug full of stewed apple and asked me if I could take it for them for the operated experimental little rabbits instead of her. I readily nodded, without realizing at the time the great risk. But luck was with me, and I carried out the task without any problem. That same evening, as a reward, I was given a portion of the food for the SS. I relished it, squatting at the back of the kitchen, where they washed the cauldrons. In the kitchen, guards were set up at different points. Should the overseer on duty by chance come near, they would give me a warning, and I would escape the back way into the yard, and from there into the cellar, where we had cold briquettes stored. As long as I live, I will not forget that food, and I can evoke its flavour to this day. And what was that wonderful meal? Potatoes, a piece of beef, and well-greased red cabbage. Never again did any food taste so well. Before going on, I must make some mention of the scope of my job. I had a list of the barracks and the number of cauldrons each barrack was to get, depending on the number of inmates. I wrote the number of the barrack on the cauldron in chalk, so that the others would know where it belonged when distributing. I wrote the list every day with a pencil on paper, most often on a piece torn from the bag of bran from which soup was made. With Janina, I pushed the cauldron to the door of the kitchen, where a cart was prepared, on which the cauldrons were loaded, and women from our column pushed it around the barracks. When dividing the cauldrons, there were always some over, and so we gradually gave second helpings to each barrack in turn. In the autumn, after a large influx of new prisoners, the column distributing the cauldrons was finished. It was said that the food can be carried to the barracks by the prisoners themselves. The ration of food for the day was thus. In the morning, a quarter of a litre of hot black substitution of coffee. At midday, 3 small potatoes and half a litre of swede or spinach, only boiled in water, together with the roots. It looked disgusting, and was insufficiently washed, so that when eating it, we rather didn't look. In the evening we got bran soup, also half a litre. The day's ration of bread was 200 grams, and later, in 1945, only 100 grams. During the long standing at roll call, some of the women, my mamma included, began to recount all the good things they had cooked at home. Once I could not stand it, and declared that if they were going to keep on like that, I would jump into the barbed wire and get some peace. Could anyone possibly keep on hearing how best to make doughnuts when one's tummy was grumbling with hunger? Nowadays I only smile when anyone says he's hungry. They're only fancying something to eat, and do not know what it is to be really hungry. Just for the feel of something in my mouth, I used to eat bread in tiny morsels, and let it dissolve on my tongue like a consecrated wafer. Anichka Kvapilova, one of the inmates, composed a poem about bread, which expressed what each slice meant for us. A slice of bread. All the bitterness and sweetness of this world has poured itself into you. The hardness of calloused hands, even the comfort of precious moments. The song of the harvesters and the picture of home, inscribed in the hearts of us all. Perhaps we will soon be there, and with this hope, we raise our voices to a slice of bread. Thank you.